Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
Something You Fear, Volume 3, Story Number 1. Some years ago, I had a delivery to Laredo, Texas. For those who don't know, commercial traffic across the border shuts down on the weekend. Since I'd gotten there on a Sunday and the delivery wasn't until Monday in the morning, I had parked at the Pilot, you know, the one across from the highway that has a strip club next to the TA. Now, we've all heard stories about thieves cutting through the back fence and stealing cargo out of the trucks. On this night, I was just about to get to sleep and suddenly it felt like there was a forklift demo derby in the trailer. Us truckers know what it feels like when it's being unloaded. This went on for a few minutes before I worked up the nerve to go see what was happening. I grabbed the tire buddy and I rushed out to confront whoever and whatever there was, and guess what? There was absolutely nobody back there. Doors were closed with the bolt seal still in place. Even the seal number was the same. Next morning, I was so paranoid, I even scaled out to make sure the weights were the same. Next story. Well, the only thing that scared me when I was driving through northern Nevada on Interstate 80, it was around 2 a.m., and I just passed Battle Mountain. This was in the middle of goddamn nowhere, and I'm the only vehicle. I haven't seen another one for a good half hour. Then, I see something coming up on the shoulder that's slightly reflective. I think it's a truck reflective tape, and he has the lights off, so I moved over to straddle the center line, as I'm the only vehicle on the road. But it wasn't a truck. It wasn't an old Indian man wearing nothing but a reflective construction vest. He wasn't walking. He wasn't hitchhiking. He was just standing there staring into the darkness. There was no broken down car in either direction. I don't know what he was doing or how he got that far out into the middle of nowhere, but that creeped me out so much that I remember the exact spot he was standing at. Next story. Not far from the Dallas and Oregon State is a highway that's built out on the Columbia River, water on both sides for a short distance. I was with friends headed to Portland, and all of a sudden a huge tall figure appeared in the headlights. Trench coat and a red face or a baklava in the center of the lane. I swerved at the last second as he's stumbling towards the driver's side. Car behind us that was following saw their headlights swerve, but they stayed behind. There was no evidence of damage to the guardrail from an accident, no lights, car, or motorbike on the road. Stopped a few miles ahead and talked to the driver of the car behind me. Agreed that it freaked us all out pretty good. Then there was another memorable incident a few years later. It was very late on Christmas Eve on a remote highway in Canada. No traffic for hundreds of kilometers. Came over the top of a hill doing about 70 miles an hour, and there's a figure in the middle of the road. Now, this is a narrow two-lane highway where it appears at, and I figure I can just swerve around, but she shuffles sideways to maintain her position in front of the truck. I realize I'm not going to avoid her, so I hammered the brakes, still intent on getting around her. I managed to stop about 10 feet in front of her. Looked like the wife from The Shining in a purple full-length quilted coat with plastic Safeway bags in both hands. She ran and threw herself on the hood, all the while screaming. I threw it in reverse and she ran for the passenger side. This was the opportunity to get by her. Hit the fuel and cranked left and watched her in the rearview mirror. I took off as fast as I could. A few minutes later, while looking for a CD between the seats, I found a cell phone that had been missing from work for weeks. There was just enough battery and signal to call the police. And what they did with that lady, I have no idea. Next story. This happened at the westbound rest area on I-80 at Snowshoe, Pennsylvania, about an hour before sunset. I was sitting in the driver's seat doing paperwork, and the truck to my left had a weird life-size doll thing belted into the passenger seat. By life-size, I mean it was as large as an adult human person. But this isn't about that. I'm looking over at this thing, and I see the attendant walking up between our trucks. It's a black guy with jeans and a gray t-shirt and a reflective vest. Cubaw bawled. As he gets closer, he looks up and we make eye contact for a second in my mirror. In that moment, it struck me that he looked just like Halloran in The Shining. He kept walking forward, and when he passed my window, he was a white guy with a blue baseball hat, but otherwise dressed the same. He kept walking like nothing unusual had happened. There was nowhere for a black guy to disappear to, or this white guy to appear from in that split second. Now, do I believe that some kind of shape-shifting sorcerer is haunting the rest area? No, I do not. I'm sure it was just fatigue and a trick of the light, or some other mundane explanation. But my daddy raised me not to go looking for trouble, and it rattled me enough to find somewhere else to park, and not to stop there after that. Next story. When I talk about this experience, no one believes me. But 2 winters ago, I was driving along and got caught halfway up Immigrant Pass in a snowstorm without chains, so I decided to pull into a rest area. Luckily for me, it only had one other truck parked right at the off-ramp. I parked all the way up front and logged off duty as soon as I pulled my curtains to make my bed, and I heard what I thought was hail hitting my roof, but it wasn't consistent, and I realized it was just snowing. I waited and listened, then heavier things kept hitting my truck like pieces of gravel, and I heard this loud roar next to my truck. What sounded like a cinder block hitting the dumpster about 45 feet from me, and then complete silence. I don't scare easy at all. I've had a gun pointed at me twice, almost stabbed with a butcher knife. I reached the window to grab someone, dodged an oncoming car that was in the wrong lane, and put out quite a few fires. But I kept my kukri machete close to me that night. It wasn't the other driver either. Their truck was dark with the curtains pulled, and it was about 5 degrees at the time. Doing the math, there is no way, and no reason, why they would do that in an empty rest area with just me and the other truck at 2 a.m. Next story. I was on I-40 heading west before Oklahoma City, and it was a weird thunderstorm that night, when at about 5 miles before the Loves, the one after that sharp curve, I noticed a really, really nice cherry red 70-ish Camaro parked on the side of the road that just almost seemed like it appeared out of thin air because I saw no silhouette of it in my lights or anything. And there's these 2 guys wearing clothes straight from that time period sitting on the trunk waving me down to stop. It was pouring rain and these 2 guys were dry. I have no idea what I saw, but it just seemed so strange, especially since it was close to 2 a.m. when this all went down. I slowed down on that curve though. Next story. I worked food service, and I had a key stop at a place in downtown St. Cloud, Minnesota. I can't remember the name, but I think it was called the St. Germain. It was a very old and historic hotel and restaurant. This was about 20 years ago, so my memory's a little foggy. I was there about 3 a.m. bringing the stuff in, and my first load was the dry stuff, which went in a caged area in the basement. I dropped my first load in the spot and went to the elevator to get the next. When I got down to the basement with a frozen product, a case of portion cups that was on top of the first stack I brought down was laying in the hallway blocking my way to the freezer. I thought somebody from the kitchen must have been there and put it out because they wanted to send it back. There was no possible way it could have gotten there on its own. It would have had to fall about 15 feet and took a right turn into the hall. I set it aside and finished the delivery. I looked around and couldn't find anyone, and I was in a massive rush, so I just forgot about it and went to my next stop. At my next stop, this old guy's cleaning the place and lets me in, and while I'm getting the kitchen ready, he walks in and says he saw me over to St. Germain. He asked me if I'd ever met Charlie over there yet. Thinking that he was talking about a friend of his who cleans over there or a chef he knew, I just said nope and moved on. He kind of chuckled and said, "You will." "Whatever, pal, I'm in a hurry." Fast forward about 5 years, and I'm watching the news, and a feature comes on called Haunted St. Cloud. On top of the list is the St. Germain Hotel in downtown St. Cloud, where a mischievous spirit named Charlie moves things around in the kitchen. I still don't believe in ghosts, but it really made me think for a while. Next story. I've been driving for about 1.5 years when I made the jump from reefer to flatbed. went through orientation and flatbed training in Montana. After that week, it was time to pick a load and make some money. The customers in Montana for that time of year were a little scarce, and most of the loads weren't paying that great. It was really grab a load to get south because that's where the better loads were. There was one load that paid very well, but it had multiple stops and was going to be difficult on a 53-foot flat and a long-wheel base truck. I took it anyways. It was a granite load, more specifically monument markers, headstones, and such. The first couple went to a funeral home, which wasn't that bad. The third was going to be a cemetery. I called ahead and was told I could park at the cemetery at the construction entrance, and the next morning I would get unloaded. I figured it was near a construction entrance. There wouldn't be any graves nearby. I was wrong. I pulled in after dark and stopped as soon as my trailer cleared the gates. It's wider there and was told that that's where I needed to park. There was a small hill in front of me. I always felt the need to get out and walk after a day of driving, stretch the legs and whatnot. So it's absolutely pitch black. It's in the country a bit, and there are no building lights or overheads to provide any light. So I got out with a flashlight and started walking up the drive, cresting the small hill and walking down. The flashlight was pointed at the dirt road, and I'm lost in thought. I picked up a shape at the edge of the light and realized it's a headstone. 50 feet away from my truck, and there are graves everywhere. That's kind of creepy, but when I heard movement on the hill behind me is when it got super creepy. Let me preface the next bit with this. I live in New Orleans. Cemetery walks and supernatural are kind of ingrained in me. I'm highly superstitious, and I've always could say I could get a bit scared of ghosts and demons. So when I heard movement behind me, I froze. I was too scared to turn around. As I stood there praying that ghosts and demons, you know, about hating to attack people with urine running down their pant leg, well, I heard one more movement, lots of it. I thought, holy, you know what? It's a ghost demon convention. I finally turned around with a light, and I see at least a dozen glowing orbs looking at me. Then I realized, those are effing eyes. I turned and fled for the truck, scared to death. I made it to the top of the hill before I looked back and realized those were deer, a bunch of damn deer. Some had bolted, a few more were watching me. I swear, if deer could laugh. Next story. It's at night and I'm driving through Utah. Not the least bit tired, so I can't attribute what I saw to being fatigued. I've got LED bulbs in my headlights, so everything is bright in front of me. For whatever reason, I reached down to the radio to turn it instead of the steering wheel controls, and for a second my eyes were off the road to look for a channel. And then I see a man in my peripheral view on the road, like fully dressed to the nines, like the young sheriff or marshal in the movie Tombstone, when Kurt Russell and them first show up, just straight standing in the road, all fully loaded in a flatbed, and locked every bit of all my wheels, all the while dropping some mud in my pants. Eyes are closed as I'm doing this, and I'm expecting to hear something smash my front end, but there's no sound. I'm fully stopped now and got out with my flashlight, streamlight stinger, bright as I'll get out, and I see no front end damage. I see no blood, no nothing. I walked along the sides, looking into ditches, and I don't see anything. I kept looking for like 30 or 45 minutes, and still nothing. I got the chills, super cold, even though my adrenaline initially had me burning up. After concluding there wasn't anything there, I got in my truck and got ready to drive off. And I looked down at my radio and the station shows 99.9. At first I didn't think anything of it, but realized that the numbers were upside down. I need to play some children tunes just to take the creepy edge off everything. Next story. This was out in the res by Tuba City. I just shut down and crawled into my sleeper and was doing a bit of reading before I tried to get some shut-eye. The area I was parked at was this old gas station next to a field, and the gas station was the only real structure. It was completely open until the hills about a half mile away. While I'm reading, all of a sudden I hear a bunch of people slapping my truck all over. It even sounded like it was coming from the roof of my rig. I hop out of the rig with my Bowie knife, and there is no one. I shine a light at my rig, which is very dusty, and there's handprints all over it, even up on the roof. No footprints anywhere that I could see, and there's no way anyone could have been able to make it behind the gas station. Slapping stopped right as I opened my curtain, and I was out of the truck a half second later. I said, "Forget this," and I ran my ass until I found a lit parking lot with a security guard to shut down that night. I refuse to shut down anywhere near the res now. Thankfully, that's not an issue, as I'm a local. Next story. This happened when I was a box truck driver for a local moving company in western Montana. It was a late December night, and we were coming back from Seattle. Another crew had left a dolly at a home, and since we were a small company, we were just gonna run by this home and grab it real quick. Anyone who's driven a significant time in Montana knows the state puts up white steel crosses where any traffic fatality has occurred, and some stretches of highways in Montana have a lot of these crosses. This stretch of highway, MT-200, was one of the ones where you could lose count of them in a short stretch. Very curving mountain road next to a river and located on the res. My buddy used to be a tow truck driver and had told me he had recovered vehicles from fatal accidents and suicides several times before on this stretch. Well, anyway, we're driving and it's a cold night, freezing fog, and we see what looks like to be headlights in the river. We stop to look and there's no car there when suddenly we hear a car horn go off. This is the middle of nowhere Montana at night, so it scared the poop out of us, and we decided to leave at this point. Next time I'm driving this stretch of highway a few months later, it's daytime, and I notice where we had pulled over, there were four steel crosses. Ended up doing a Google search later and found out a family of four had gone off the road there into the river. Anytime I drive this stretch to this day, I get a pit in my stomach. Next story. My wife and I stayed in a hotel on the interstate near Pensacola. About midnight, the room above us started making noise like dragging furniture across a concrete floor. We called the desk clerk and asked her to call and tell them to stop. They didn't stop. We called 15 minutes later to tell the desk they were still making noise, but she said no one was in that room. It stopped just after that. Next morning, I went upstairs. No one there, no one even in that area. The curtains were open and the room upstairs was just like ours. Typical Holiday Inn style furniture bolted down and didn't move. On top of that, there was no bare floor, wall to wall. Carpet is what they had. So, where did that noise come from? Next story. I was stationed at Beale Air Force Base in Northern California in the early 2000s. I went for a spontaneous, spirited drive out by Grass Valley one night without a cell phone, nor GPS or much of any geographical idea where I was nor where I was going. At some point, the car's onboard computer was mentioning gas was getting low. I just kept making turns and exploring the countryside. Within another 30 minutes, I made my situation worse and was reminded by the flashing fuel gauge with no mileage left. About this point, I passed a person walking down the road. I assumed they may know the area better, so I pulled over to pick them up. This was around midnight. I could hear these Sasquatch-sized feet running to my car on the shoulder of the road. And as he entered the car, I realized how imposing of a figure they were. 6'4 or so and probably 220 lean pounds. And I'm about 5'10", 150 pounds. My nerves were exercised quickly when I noticed a weird bag they were holding. This person's body odor was also overwhelming. As I started to ask questions and get monosyllabic responses, my sense of danger really skyrocketed. I knew I needed to keep talking and try and divert this person from their internal plan. I watched his face twitch as I kept talking, almost like he fighting internally to visualize some plan he was beginning to orchestrate. He was interested in the car, and I had to start using white lies to undervalue the car. I had a tough time lying, similar to those with Asperger's. Eventually, I got his name and used it often to try and humanize him. I noticed and even reminded Jeff to put the seatbelt on and didn't get a response. This detail became one of my crude plans if my life was threatened, to stand on the brakes and put them through the windshield. I'd much rather prefer to tell the story in person, as I had Jeff in my car for a couple of hours as I tried to help him out. He was down, bad on life, and as I drove him around to friends and family's houses, I felt some compassion from being rejected by most. During our hours of conversation, I learned Jeff was recently released from jail, claimed drug charges, and it appeared that he had some sort of testing equipment in that weird bag I kept trying to identify. It didn't make sense why he wouldn't be in a position of some sort of laboratory instruments, but I didn't feel comfortable to ask him. Eventually, Jeff asked to be dropped off on the side of I-80. I exited my car to shake his weak, dejected hand, and my suspicions were confirmed. Jeff said, "I don't know what trustworthy part of the country you grew up, but never pick up a stranger." I had a nervous smile as he continued, "If this was last year at the very least, you would be finding another way home right now." He thanked me for reminding him there were good people who deserved to be treated well, and parted by asserting, "Do not do this again." I continued to search his cold, dark eyes to show some level of emotion on his face. There was none. I did an about-face and walked back to the car. As I drove back to base that night, I was conflicted by that soulless face I last remembered. I expected to see some level of gratitude I was previously accustomed to from growing up in northeastern Connecticut. On reflection, I think Jeff showed his gratitude in a more advanced manner that I had to unravel, i.e., he knows there are people more evil than him who would not have found the resolve and knows how naive I was, well, before I came to terms with it. Thank you, Jeff, for your mercy and life lesson. Next story. I used to work security at a nuclear power plant. Usually late second shift or early third shift, we would get alarms off of one of the buildings. When you check the printer for the alarm, it would have a badge number, but there would be none. Or we would get a door alarm caused by someone exiting without using their card. A check of the printer would show no one had been in the building in an hour and that person had exited. We referred to the ghost as Norman. Since there was a tale about some construction worker being killed in an accident in the area of that building just before the plant went online, we eventually found out that the tale was a true story. A worker named Norman had been killed in an accident in that area. The alarms, however, that's still a mystery. Or maybe not. Maybe it was Norman all along. Next story. I wasn't a security guard then, but I did almost all the duties of one. I worked as a manager at an event center, and it was my job to lock up, secure the building every day. Looking back on it, I wish we had security. It wasn't unusual for us to see the occasional spooky thing at this job. Lights flickering, stuff being out of place, and this was something different. It started with a few doors found unlocked by the opener. Naturally, as a manager, I got Fort and was told I'd missed those doors. Then it happened more and more frequently, and still I got blamed. Until one day, my immediate supervisor found a door unlocked. However, I didn't work the day before. He had locked up himself. He gave me orders that day. Everyone was to stay in the office at the end of the day so he and I could lock up together personally. So we did. Same thing happened. Next day, I was for sure going to get fired, but my boss came to my side and said something was fishy, and he'd quit if they fired me. Naturally, he saved my job, but we didn't know what was causing this until one day we found something under the bleachers, a tarp, food wrappers, snacks, empty bottles, set up as if someone had been sleeping there. We took pictures and went to our immediate supervisor. They still managed to write it off. Looking back on it, the girls would feel eerie walking through the area, and some didn't want to work alone. We never got a definitive answer as to if it was a ghost or someone living there. They even doubled down on writing it off the second we uttered someone could have lived in there. I can only come to three conclusions. Someone did this on purpose to get me fired. A ghost or someone living in there. Not the most conventional ghost story, but it was freaky, not knowing who or what it was. Next story. I worked as a patrol driver for a research and development company. I would drive around in a crappy little patrol car in this big industrial complex. Most of my issues were with the regular old living locals, but I've had a few weird occurrences and have even heard more secondhand. Most of the buildings were relatively new, but there was an old brick building built back in the early days of the Industrial Revolution. As you can imagine, there was a lot of suffering and death in that building back in the day. We had a dedicated interior patrol guard, but when he was busy, I would sometimes be sent to do alarms in the building. One time around 2 a.m. in the morning, I was sent to a motion sensor alarm in the mill building. I walked around for a few minutes until I finally found the source of the alarm. It turned out to be a dead sensor, but as I was leaving, my flashlight kept turning off. It wasn't dead, but it would turn off every few seconds. I hustled my way out of there, but I swear I heard footsteps behind me. The dedicated interior patrol guard told me lots of stories. He worked that site from the early 2000s, and as far as I know, he's still working there today. He said every so often in that old mill building, he'd hear a voice, see shadows moving, and twice, he says he saw a man in a dark suit and a top hat facing out the window overlooking the river. He never responded when spoken to and never seemed to move from that spot. If you blinked or looked away, even for a fraction of a second, he was gone when you looked back. How much of that story is true and how much is an old man trying to scare the young new guy? I'm not sure, but I know it scared the hell out of me and still does. Next story. I worked a 12-hour night shift at an old library that was undergoing renovations at the time. This building was very old and was built in the early 1900s. The side office where we sat was in the basement and it was very cold and dingy. I arrived early from my shift one night to relax and enjoy a coffee before the night began. One of the foremen saw me sitting in the office and said to me, "Did you know where you're sitting, they had to extract coffins from the ground before they built the library?" I never felt the same working there again after that. Apparently, the site was a convent Catholic school before the library. A few nights after that, I experienced strange feelings like I was being followed or something during my patrols. One night, after finishing my patrol, I got back into the office in the basement, and not 2 seconds after I sat down, I heard a window break upstairs. I was so freaked out, I ran outside and walked around the building to see if anyone was around. Nobody. This was after 3 a.m., so it was very quiet around there. Other nights, I would hear things fall to the floor. Just a very chilling experience working there. I worked security at all kinds of sites and never experienced anything like that place. Next story. We had a PACU bay at one of my old jobs, aptly number room 113, that we only ever used for potlucks or people who died in the OR. The call bell was always going off, telemetry alarm would go wild, and it was about 20 degrees colder there than anywhere else in the unit. I used to get violently nauseated every time I walked over the threshold. And sometimes, you would hear someone breathing agonally in your ear, if your heart wasn't going 140 beats a minute. And quite a few people felt someone tugging their jackets trying to get them to stay. I will also never forget the psych patient I had, who was hallucinating so badly she jumped out of a four-story window, have a mild moment of clarity to tell me the woman behind me was wearing a purple dress and carrying irises, and she had a message. "Mary says she brought you a quarter." My grandmother's name was Mary, and she was buried in her favorite purple dress, and all around her funeral flowers were irises. She also used to give me a quarter whenever we ran errands so that I could use it in the gumball machine. I later found a random quarter next to my stethoscope on my work computer. Next story. Every hospital I've ever worked in has at least one ghost. I've never worked in a nursing home, but I hear from a friend who has it, they have their ghost as well. Years ago, and this will age me, I worked at the old Peter Bent Brigham Hospital. We just moved into a brand new tower and the old hospital was scheduled for demolition. Several co-workers wanted to walk through the old unit one last time. As we walked past what had once been the large men's ward, we saw a couple of figures in what should have been a completely empty ward. One of my co-workers peeked in to investigate and immediately backed out, face as white as a blank order sheet. Of course, I was curious then, so I looked in myself. All I saw was two older men sitting on an old bed chatting. My co-worker explained, "That was Billy and Larry, or Mo and Joe. I've forgotten the names. They were frequent flyers in the ward. Both were royal pains in the patoot when they were alive, which they weren't anymore. She said they'd been rumored to still be hanging around, but no one had actually seen them before until then."